Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Jonathan Jones reporting. Fighting between separatists and government forces in southern Yemen has killed at least 36 people, the Red Cross says. The president of the country accuses the fighters of a coup. About 185 people have been wounded. Correspondent Edward Uranian is monitoring the situation for VOA from Cairo.
In a second day of clashes, forces loyal to Yemeni President Abdrabu Mansour Hadi exchanged gunfire with southern separatist fighters around key government buildings Monday in Yemen's southern interim capital of Aden. Arab media reports several official government buildings are in the hands of the separatists, but that a standoff prevails between the two sides in most places. Supporters of the separatists also chanted slogans against Hadi's government in several major squares of Aden as clashes took place in other parts of the city. Yemeni analyst Yahya Abu Hatim in Cairo told Arab media the separatists have been part of the ongoing national dialogue in Yemen and have no clear reason to withdraw their support from the government now. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
11 members of the Afghan National Army were killed and 16 wounded in an early morning attack on a military academy in Kabul on Monday. The Afghan Defense Ministry said the attack is against an army unit providing security for the academy and not the academy itself. Witnesses say the fighting near the Marshal Fahim National Defense University continued after daybreak. The Islamic State has claimed responsibility for the attack through its Amaq news agency. This is VOA News. President Trump is ruling out talks with Afghan's Taliban. He's vowing to finish them in the wake of a wave of terrorist attacks in Kabul that killed hundreds of people and wounded hundreds more.
They're killing people left and right. Innocent people are being killed left and right. Bombing in the middle of children, in the middle of families, bombing, killing all over Afghanistan. So we don't want to talk with the Taliban.
The president spoke during a meeting with a delegation of United Nations Security Council ambassadors at the White House on Monday. In Somalia, low rainfall for a fifth consecutive growing season has aid agencies sounding the alert. More than a third of the population is in need of food assistance, and that number could grow in coming months. Correspondent Mohammed Youssef is monitoring the situation for VOA from Nairobi.
Below average rainfall in Somalia has aid agencies concerned about this year's harvest, expected to begin in April. But aid officials say the situation has not reached the level it did at the same time last year, when the United Nations warned of a potential famine. Food production is expected to be below normal again this year in most of Somalia, according to a recent survey by Somalia's Food Security and Analysis Unit, a project managed by the UN Food and Agriculture Organization. Without continued large-scale assistance, the agency says food security is expected to deteriorate in the next 5 months. The survey shows 300,000 children are in need of food aid, including 48,000 who are severely malnourished. On Tuesday, the Somali government is expected to launch its humanitarian response and action plan for 2018. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The Trump administration is hardening refugee admissions to the United States by looking deeper into the background of applicants from 11 high-risk countries. Officials declined to name the countries during a call with reporters on Monday to announce the changes. An official said one difference will be more in-depth interviews for refugees from those countries. Syrians living under temporary protected status in the United States will know by Tuesday whether the Trump administration is extending those protections or canceling them, as it has done with three other countries in recent months. The decision is due by January 30th. It'll affect about 6,000 Syrians. The designation allows some nationals of countries facing natural disasters or extreme violence to remain in the U.S. and work legally. You can find more on these and other late-breaking and developing stories from around the world around the clock at voanews.com and on the VOA News mobile app. I'm Jonathan Jones reporting from the world headquarters of the Voice of America in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA. We'll be right back.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberian President George Weah announces a reduction in his salary and benefits and hopes the national legislature will do the same.
In view of the very rapidly deteriorating situation of the economy, I am informing you today with immediate effect that I will reduce my salary and benefit by 25%.
Gambia's President Adamman Barrow will discuss youth empowerment and employment. Togo's opposition parties will hold more anti-government protests tomorrow as they await ECOWAS-sponsored dialogue. And Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga will be sworn in today, Tuesday, despite government warning that such act will be treasonous.
NASA has no option but to keep on doing what they're doing because there is nobody extending an olive branch to calm down the situation. So as it were, NASA supporters will be in Nairobi and swearing in will go on.
Jakayo Midiwo is a prominent member of Kenya's main opposition coalition known as NASA. Many women in Burkina Faso still search out clandestine abortion procedures, and violence and insecurity are blocking polio eradication in three countries, including Nigeria. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberian President George Mani Weah has announced a reduction in his salary and benefits and hopes the national legislature will do the same. It is estimated a Liberian president makes nearly $4 million per year, including salary and benefits. Delivering his first annual State of the Nation address on Monday, President Weah said he inherited a broken economy characterized by a free-falling currency, rising inflation, high unemployment, and low foreign reserves.
The salaries of the president and the vice president are established by the legislature and cannot be increased or reduced during period for which they are elected. However, in view of the very rapidly deteriorating situation of the economy, I am informing you today with immediate effect that I will reduce my salary and benefit by 25% and give the proceeds back to the Consolidated Fund for allocation and appropriation as they see fit. In the meantime, I will ask you, honorable ladies and gentlemen, to follow my lead in the interest of our constituents. Our economy is broken. Our government is broke. Our currency is in free fall. Inflation is rising. Unemployment is at an unprecedented high, and our foreign reserves are at an all-time low. Honorable ladies and gentlemen, this is the challenge that we face. In order to overcome these constraints and reverse this trend, we, the executive, will have to work in close collaboration with you, the legislature, as separate branches of government to find solutions to these obstacles to our progress and development.
President Weah also called for a constitutional revision to remove a provision prohibiting foreigners from owning land in Liberia. He said to prevent foreigners from owning land is inconsistent with his declaration that Liberia is open for business.
No foreign investor will be willing to make significant direct investment in our country if they cannot own property in fee simple. It is inconsistent with my pronouncement that Liberia is open for business. Liberian citizens are free to purchase property in any other country, yet our constitution and laws will not allow similar privilege to be accorded to citizens of other nations. I therefore strongly recommend that this restriction be removed and that the appropriate rules and regulations of the Land Commission and other relevant agencies be amended and strengthened to accommodate this new development if approved by referendum.
For so long, diaspora Liberians have been calling for dual citizenship. Mr. Weah said diaspora Liberians should be welcomed back home whether or not they renounce their adopted nationalities.
I believe that most Liberians who are also citizens of another country probably acquire the additional nationality as a means to escape from the terrible atrocity which characterized our civil conflict and for economic survival in their new countries of residence. If, as a condition precedent for another country to grant citizenship to these persons, they have to disavow their loyalty to Liberia and pledge allegiance to the laws of another country, then it could have been out of necessity rather than a matter of the heart. And if conditions now exist in Liberia that make them want to return home and contribute a quarter to the development of our common patrimony, then I do not think that it is fair to treat them as non-citizens in their own land of birth. Many Liberians in the diaspora have heard my clear call to return home and bring their energies, skills, talent, and expertise and join us in the building of a new Liberia. We need them. And so long as they were born in this country, they were Liberian first. And I believe that they should be welcomed back home with open arms.
President Weah said his administration will be based on what he called the four pillars of his platform: power to the people, economy and jobs, sustaining the peace and governance and transparency. Gambian President Adama Barrow says the focus of his government and the Gambian people should be on developing the country and not whether or not he serves 3 or 4 years in power. In part two of his exclusive interview with reporter Sini Marina, President Barrow says creating employment for the youth, who make up 65% of the country's population, is important to his administration. But first, he said, the economy must be stabilized.
It's about 60 to 65% of our population as youths. And I think that is very healthy for this country. They represent our manpower as far as work is concerned. But if I said we wanted to stabilize, you cannot create jobs if your economy is not stable. As of now, as the economy is stable, it has affected a lot of areas. But we are not relenting. We have opened up this principle of democracy and so forth. We are progressing in those areas, and we are winning the confidence of investors. I believe that the private sector have a very, very big role to play, a very important role to play, as far as job creation is concerned, as far as economic growth is concerned. And a lot of people have interest. We have signed certain contracts, and we are in advanced stage in discussing with a lot of investors. The tourism sector, we are expecting over 200,000 tourists this year, and tourism is going to continue as a yearly thing. That is, we are creating jobs in them. I can't give you the percentage, but we have created jobs in those areas. We are engaging in the bilateral level with China and other countries so that we invest in the agriculture sector. Why in the agriculture sector? Agriculture is the backbone of this country. That is the reality. That's where our strength is. So we have to concentrate on that. We are engaging them because we have the land, we have the water, we have the manpower, and we have the market. We produce in 13% only. So that means we have a market of 87%. And our geographical location is so connected to other countries. So we have a wider market. If we are into farming, mechanized farming, and we add the value here, that will create a lot of jobs for us. In that area, we are very confident we can create jobs.
The coalition agreed to go in for 3 years. This is the controversy. Talk of the town. What is the position of Mr. Barrow with regard to 3-5 years?
This debate will continue. So, but I don't think it is, we should be wasting our time on this debate. The most important thing is, let's concentrate and develop this country. 3 years, 5 years, we leave it to the Gambian people. I think that's the decision of the Gambian people. Macky Sall, when he was coming, he said he would be in office for 5 years instead of 7 years. There was a lot of debate. At the end, I think it's the Senegalese people who finally make the decision. And I think we leave the decision to the Gambian people.
Finally, the victims of former President Yahya Jammeh are not very happy with your government in terms of, they said you are slow in terms of bringing justice for them. What do you think about this?
We have to exercise patience. What people want, they want us to do the Yahya Jammeh way. We don't want it that way. We contested election based on the principle of democracy, rule of law. We have to follow that process. Everything is a process. And I think we are making a lot of efforts. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission will start on February.
That was Gambian President Adama Mbarro in part two of an exclusive interview with reporter Cindy Mariner in Banjo. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 30th. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. Kenya's main opposition coalition, the National Super Alliance, known as NASA, says it will proceed with plans to officially install former Prime Minister Raila Odinga as the country's president in the capital, Nairobi, today, Tuesday. The party has called on its supporters and the general public to attend the swearing-in ceremony to be held at the Uhuru Park. But the Attorney General has warned that swearing-in Mr. Odinga is treasonous and a violation of the Constitution. The Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission declared incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta the winner of the presidential election runoff. The opposition party rejected the outcome of the election, saying it was fraught with irregularities and rigging to favor the ruling party. VOA's Peter Clotty reached Jakayo Midiwo, a prominent member of the Kenya's main opposition party, NASA.
Well, you know how the elections went in Kenya, and I think there is no serious attempt by the people holding power to reconcile the country. You know, just this week, NASA gave out the actual election results, which showed very clearly that Raila won. We are in this position now, as it were, where only some form of dialogue could have saved our country. I see that Uhuru Kenyatta is not taking NASA seriously. I also seem to think that NASA has no option but to keep on doing what they're doing because there is nobody extending an olive branch to calm down the situation. So as it were, NASA supporters will be in Nairobi and the swearing in will go on.
The Uhuru Stadium, where NASA plans to inaugurate former Prime Minister Raila Odinga as the president, is closed, and the police are going to be in numbers. Aren't you concerned the leadership and some of your supporters could possibly be arrested before the ceremony even takes place?
I think it would be foolish on the side of the government to try to intimidate the public. From where I stand, what I see is some kind of resolve from NASA and the public, which are really tired of bad governance. And I don't think you can force people using the power of the gun to rule them by force. I don't think it will work ultimately. It just shows, really, just lack of proper leadership in this country.
What do you think will happen if the government using the state security to clamp on an activity the administration has deemed illegal and an affront to the Constitution that contravenes the Constitution that could create chaos and plunge the country into instability?
I don't think they would go that far. And I really hope they don't try to go that direction. I think there is no law broken, and the right of association is enshrined in our Constitution. They can't stop that. That would be counterproductive, but I can tell you at the end of the day, it will be Uhuru and his people crying, not the NASA people crying. The blood of the people are already in their hands. They have done it before, but I can also tell you that my observation is that nobody is scared. So I think it is to wait and see, but I really hope and pray that they will not take the law into their own hands.
So what do you expect to happen Tuesday as NASA goes ahead with the plans to inaugurate Raila Odinga as the legitimate president of Kenya, despite warnings by the Attorney General and the spokesperson of the government saying this undermines the Constitution and is treasonous?
But it's Chief Justice has said he can't stop it. There is no law broken. I mean, Attorney General and the Chief Justice, who is the greater protector of the law? The Attorney General is an Uhuru man. What do you expect him to say? He is not a neutral arbiter. He is not. What is sensible, where Kenya is today, would have the honorable thing would have been for Uhuru to pick up his phone and call Raila. But as long as not going to call the winner of elections, I see Kenya becoming two countries, the way I see it. Because more than half the country have decided to say they don't want to be ruled by Uhuru Kenyatta.
Jakayo Midiwo is a prominent member of Kenya's main opposition coalition known as NASA. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Nairobi. Togo's 14-party opposition coalition says it will hold another protest tomorrow, Wednesday, to demand the resignation of President Fouad Nassimbe. The protesters are demanding a return to the country's 1992 constitution, which established a two-term limit for the presidency. President Nassimbe, in power since 2005, is proposing a referendum to change the constitution to a 2 5-year term of office. Bridget Ajamangbo is coordinator of the coalition of 14 political parties that are leading the protest. She says Wednesday's demonstration is intended to put more pressure on President Nassimbe as both sides await the resumption of a dialogue sponsored by the Economic Community of West African States.
Know that we went to pay a visit to the head of state of Guinea and Ghana because they've called us, and it was to assess the implementation of the measures for APEC. And after this assessment, the head of state of Guinea made the suggestion that the government of Togo should take quickly those measures for appeasement to allow the dialogue to start somewhere between 23rd and 26th of July. But to date, we don't have something new with regard to the measures for appeasement. They have not been taken. And what we can tell you is that we are expecting a delegation sent by the head of state of Ghana. They should come and see us in Togo this week. And we are expecting that with their visit, the government will understand that he has to take those measures.
Bridget, who is supposed to begin the dialogue? The government, the ECOWAS, or the opposition?
It's the mediators that started to help us to have this dialogue. And precisely, it's the head of state of Ghana who should call for this dialogue. And for us, we think that this government still needs to feel that Togolese people won't change. That's why we'll be on the street this week again. We'll start from Wednesday to Saturday.
The last time there was a demonstration, there was violence. Is the government allowing you now to have peaceful demonstrations and in all cities of Togo?
What we always do is that we respect the legal framework. And for this time, we'll give them a notice informing them that we have to demonstrate. And we hope that there will not be violence.
Do you, as the opposition, have any precondition for the dialogue, or you are open to dialogue now?
We are open to dialogue, but what we are saying is that the government should show its goodwill to discuss and to find solutions for this conflict. If the government is not able to take those kind of measures to correct and to redress the human rights violations that they committed by arresting some demonstrators, what do you expect to receive, to gain from this dialogue? It means that if we go to this dialogue, we'll not gain anything. So that's why they should show their political will to find a solution to the conflict. And this will encourage everybody. This will show our people that now political leaders are all willing to find a solution to the conflict.
Bridget, thank you very much. It's so nice to talk with you.
Thank you very much.
Bridget Ajamabo is coordinator of a coalition of 14 political parties that are leading the protest in Togo. She was speaking with me from the capital, Lomé. Although abortion is legal in Burkina Faso for certain cases, many women still search out clandestine procedures. As of 2014, 23% of abortions were self-induced. Jean Benjamin Bado is a law student and supervisor at the New Initiatives for Development and Health Organization in Burkina Faso. He spoke to Ricky Stryak about the challenges women face in accessing legal and safe abortions in Burkina Faso.
Abortion in Burkina Faso, we must say that abortion is a phenomenon that is not recognized by the law of our country. For the time being, abortion is not authorized, but there are four domains in which it is authorized. This is in case of rape, in case of incest, abortion is authorized in Burkina Faso. There are also the case where the health of the mother is in peril. And there is a case where the health of the child is in peril. So, but we must also add there are some conditions that we have to respect.
I know in some of these countries, in some cases, that even though the law says a woman can have an abortion if she has been raped, the hurdles to her actually accessing a legal abortion are difficult, even if she has been raped or her health is in jeopardy. Is that the case in Burkina Faso?
Yes, it is the case in Burkina Faso, because as the law don't authorize the abortion, we women tend to practice, but this is being it is done. They don't make it in the legal way, in the medical way, because it is not authorized, and they tend to go and see the others who will give them some method that is not good.
What does your group think needs to change?
To resolve this problem, we are speaking about the legal cadre of abortion. Because for kids where abortion is authorized, and maybe in these four cases, there are some conditions, and these conditions are not respected in Burkina Faso, because these conditions even are. When we say that if a woman who are pregnant in case of rape can practice the abortion, you have to reduce the state, because we notice that in many cases the woman, she cannot practice the abortion because these conditions are too hard for her. So our fighting is to reduce these conditions and permit to the women to be able to practice abortion in the case. For the time being, it is abortion in the legal sphere.
Jean Benjamin Bado is a law student and supervisor at the New Initiatives for Development and Health Organization in Burkina Faso. He was speaking to Ricky Stryer from Ouagadougou. And that's it for this Tuesday, January 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte, wishing you a lovely day.
The State of the Union Address is an important annual message delivered by the President of the United States to a joint session of the United States Congress. VOA will provide complete coverage of President Donald Trump's first State of the Union speech, along with a Democratic response, beginning Wednesday, January 31st at 1:45 UTC.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band.